Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Thanks so much for being here with us on this Wednesday afternoon where we are. Maybe it's a Wednesday evening or even a Thursday morning where you are. Wherever you are, we're glad you're here. And we're glad Joe Heschmeyer is here. And we're going to do something that I don't know if it was a year ago or 2 years ago we started doing around this time of year, which is opening up the phones for people who are going through the RCIA process and aspiring to the sacraments at Easter in the Catholic Church. The usual way nowadays that it's done is that people either come into the church completely or, you know, by baptism, confirmation, and Eucharist, or they complete their sacraments of initiation. If maybe they were baptized as a child but never had any more sacraments than that, they will receive confession and communion confirmation all on the same night. So Easter Eve the eve of Easter Sunday is a big day now in many, many parishes. So that means that right now at this moment during Lent, there's lots of people preparing to come into the church, and maybe they got a question. Maybe they're coming near to their time of preparation and thinking, I still don't know this, or I'd like a better understanding of that. Can you explain this or that to me? So if you are among those currently in the RCIA, this hour is for you. 888-318-7884. I know it's not RCIA everywhere, but let's just say if you're preparing to come into the church in any way, 888-318-7884. Our guest is Joe Heschmeyer. He's the author of a whole lot of books, including The Early Church Was the Catholic Church, and he's the proprietor of a wonderful new podcast called Shameless Popery. Joe Heschmeyer, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
And I can see you, Joe. We had a little camera trouble, but now yes. I can see you.
We're using the laptop camera, so anyone who's watching the show may say, that looks worse than usual. And I'm only partly to blame for that.
We're not interested in blame. We're just glad you're here.
No, I just meant like my personal appearance.
Okay.
I don't mean the technical side.
Yeah, we will assign blame after the show, however, and I'm sure we'll find some way to blame Zach. The number here is 888-318-7884, 888-31-TRUTH. Joe, you, I don't know if what the word is, teach the RCIA or lead the RCIA, but you're involved in the RCIA process in your parish.
Yeah, I talk to people in a room, a few times a semester, basically.
Okay.
About issues related to the faith. Usually I will cover Mary, Eucharist, papacy, and then like a Q&A, like ask me anything, whatever you got.
Uh-huh.
Kind of like the show.
Yeah.
So I'll do 2 to 4 of those every 6 months, say, or every, I guess, 4 months. So it's a blast. It's really nice to get to hear the questions people have. There's a good mix between the ones you kind of know are coming, the kind of standard questions a lot of people have. And then, especially on the night when you open it up, it's anybody's guess what they're going to ask about, because you get all sorts of questions. Sometimes they're questions you've never even heard anyone ask before. You know, like really specific questions about the Dead Sea Scrolls is always kind of the example I use.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't expecting that one. But yeah. Well, let me ask you this then. And calls are coming. Let me just let you know how many lines are open. There's 3 lines open. So 3 lines have folks on and 3 lines open if you're in the RCIA process. You know what? If you're not in the RCIA process, but you're moving towards coming into the Catholic Church, whether it's at this Easter or in Easter next year or in the future, 888-318-7884. We'd love to hear your story and take your question. Excuse me. I don't know why that got me so upset.
You apparently thought it was hilarious to take people's questions, just uproariously funny.
Suddenly, I was overcome when I said, we'll take your question. And hopefully we'll get you an answer from Joe, 888-318-7884. But I want to ask you this, Joe, before we do go to those phones. What is the point of all of this RCIA, and do you see it doing something for people? Does it have an effect?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the answer is that you want to know what you're saying yes to. And the same, I mean, it's really not that different from why we do marriage prep. Because if someone's going to make a big commitment,
uh-huh,
a lifelong commitment, we want them to be as prepared as possible before they say yes. And that we find it's a lot easier than trying to get people caught up to date afterwards. Like, if you're going to say in the presence of God and the people in the church, like, yes, this is what I believe, I'm ready to live my life according to this. We want to make sure that you don't have some interior reservations and that you can make that yes in good faith.
Okay.
So that's what it's about. And I find it really is helpful because most people who are in RCIA, I would say they're in a place where maybe they're convinced, maybe they're interested, but there are usually still some questions where they don't feel comfortable answering the question. Let's put it that way. You know, that there are some questions where if they go home and say, "Mom and Dad, I'm converting to Catholicism," they know in their minds, if Mom and Dad ask me this question, I don't know the answer to that question yet.
Yeah.
And so the more we can kind of prepare people in that regard, many of them are ready to come in anyway, but they still want to know, well, how do we make sense of this, that, or the other thing?
Yeah.
So, it's something where there's a fair amount of that. And sometimes it will be a thing where someone is just, they're not ready to come in, but they're curious. They're inquirers, as we would say, and they have some inquiries. And sometimes they find the answer they're looking for and say, okay, I'm ready to say yes to this.
Yes.
So I've seen some beautiful fruit come from it, and I've seen some great conversations. So I'm pretty pleased with the experience and the process. I know other people, it depends kind of where you are in the country, and you know, a lot of this is volunteer run, so your mileage may vary, but it's something I'm very glad exists as kind of a program.
888-318-7884. We'd love those good conversations right now. If you're in the RCIA, if you're moving towards receiving the sacraments, whatever the process is where you are welcome to call with your question. 888-318-7884. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest. And we'll start with Kevin in Miami, Florida, listening on the Catholic Answers Live app. Kevin, thanks for downloading the app onto your phone. Go ahead with the question for Joe.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for having me. So I'm coming into the church in about a month. I'm very excited for that. Recently, I got in a little debate with a Protestant pastor. He's actually very intelligent, not like your typical shallow Protestant, very, very smart.
Wow, that's quite a view you have of Protestants, however. that's been your experience?
He brought up the Council of Rome and the Synod of Rome.
I see.
By Pope Damasus the First. He said he even agreed with the list. He said that the difference of the Bibles was not even a big deal for him. What really matters to him is like purgatory, invoking the saints, which is what my question is about. I told him about how, you know, we venerate the saints because God did something awesome in their life and whatnot. And he said, and I also said how like we decorate our churches with sometimes statues of the saints. And I said, well, even the Jewish temple was very beautiful. It wasn't like your typical just bland, you know, just full of white walls. And he said, yeah, but if they would have had a statue of Moses, you would have been stoned. And that's kind of true. I don't think I've ever seen Jews make statues of a saint. So is there a reason for that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So first of all, congratulations on coming home. Second, I'm actually really glad you're having the conversation. It sounds like you're having with the Protestant pastors. It's really good. So I want to explore two things. One is because you mentioned purgatory, I want to point you in the direction of an answer there. Because in this particular case, you've got a Protestant pastor who realizes that Second Maccabees is inspired by God. That is a rare thing. But in Second Maccabees, chapter 12, you see this practice of praying for those who've died. And beginning in verse 38, going to the end of the chapter, that there are men who die in battle, but they have these amulets around their neck that are of these idols of Jamnia. And so it's not clear, you know, is this superstition? Is this idolatry? Whatever the case is, these are men who died fighting for Israel, but seem to have been religiously conflicted, we'll say. And so Judas Maccabeus and the other men pray for them, that they'll be purified from their sin. And it says in verse 45 that if he was looking to the splendid reward that is laid up for those who fall asleep in godliness, it was a holy and pious thought. And that he makes this offering and he sends it to the temple. And it said he made atonement for the dead, that they may be delivered from their sin. So you have very clearly this Jewish understanding that there is a purification after death. Now, whether you think Second Maccabees is inspired or not, Protestants and Catholics alike should grapple with the fact that the Jews believe in something like purgatory. You can look up the Jewish Encyclopedia, has a great article on purgatory. There are some differences in how we understand it, but the core idea is right there. It's why after you die, there's a Jewish ritual of sitting Shiva, where you know, you gather together and pray for the dead. And all of this is presupposing a very different vision of the afterlife than the one most Protestants believe in, where there's no room for purgatory. There's no room for any kind of post-death purification. And much less is there room for praying for the dead and making atonement for them with, you know, gift offerings to the temple. And all of this stuff is very foreign, I think, from a Protestant worldview, but is very consistent with a Jewish, an Orthodox, or a Catholic one. So that'd be the one place I'd point. I know it's not the heart of your question, but because you mentioned that he accepts the inspiration of these books, well, that makes a difference in how we understand things like purgatory. That's why it matters if we get the right Bible. You know, if you're a sola scriptura Protestant, you say everything has to come from scripture alone, and then you don't have a complete Bible, you're doing yourself no favors there. But then, to your other question about images, I'd say two things. One, you should look up the synagogue called Dura Europos, D-U-R-A, and then it's a dash, E-U-R-O-P-O-S. Because for a long time, we had this idea that ancient Jewish synagogues were totally bare on the inside. And we've discovered a wealth of archaeological evidence that finds that wasn't true, that actually they had a lot of images. And so part of the reason he's able to pose this question is because we have a misconception about Jewish iconoclasm, you know, to use a technical term, that they had no depictions. In fact, when you look at the temple, there are all sorts of depictions. And when you look at Dura Europos and other ancient synagogues, there are all kinds of depictions. Nevertheless, there was this clear sense that something changes with the incarnation. Because the whole reason you couldn't make depictions of God, for instance, in the Old Testament is he was beyond human understanding. And that remains true in a really important sense. And yet, Jesus is the image of the invisible God. And so Jesus makes it okay to put a human face on the divine person, because that's what happens in the incarnation. And so the Catechism in paragraph 2129 to 2132 has a section that talks about this, about how this is what radically changes with the incarnation. And then once you can make an image of Jesus, well, by all means, you can make an image of Moses or of the saints or anything else. So that's the critical difference, is that with the incarnation, there now is an image of the invisible God. We couldn't have done that on our own, but God does that in the incarnation. Does that help?
Awesome. Could I ask a quick follow-up?
Yes.
I've heard both sides of saying then that it's right or wrong to depict God the Father then, because God the Son became flesh. But what about God the Father?
Controversial.
Wrong or right?
Yeah, there was historically, like in the early church, a ban on depicting God the Father in both the East and the West. And it was later in the West that they began to depict God the Father. And you see this sometimes in the East as well. But I understand why, you know, no one has seen the Father. But then Jesus says, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. So it is based on kind of the theological understanding there. So when you see depictions of the Father, they're often just depictions of Jesus, but as the Father. I don't know if that makes sense. Like an older-looking version of Jesus to show this theological understanding that if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. But to also recognize that without Jesus, there's no way to depict the Father at all.
Kevin, I got to leave it there because we're now past time for the break and we got to take that break. It's an open forum, but for those who are preparing to come into the church, and I'll tell you what, we're not going to turn you away if you're just deciding whether you want to prepare to come into the church. You're welcome here. But those approaching the church, either as candidates, catechumens, or just as curious and possibilities, give us a call, 888-318-7884. Right back with more. Open forum for those preparing to come into the church with Joe Heschmeyer on Catholic Answers Live right after this.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious mystic monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All mystic monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase mystic monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Save the date. Saturday, August 26th is the day, and Birmingham, Alabama is the place for the 2023 EWTN Family Celebration. We're celebrating Mother Angelica's love for the Eucharist, and join us to mark the centennial year of Mother's birth. Make your plans now to attend this free event. More details coming soon at our Family Celebration webpage, EWTN.com/Family Celebration.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. We've had just such a great experience since we started doing these. Sometimes we do them in the summer because that's when many people decide whether or not they are going to enter the RCIA process at their parish or at the parish near where they live. And sometimes we do them now, right before Easter, because people have lots of questions as they're preparing to receive the sacraments. And then we usually try to do at least one during the Easter season and ask, how did it go? And have you got questions now that you've been baptized and confirmed and received the Eucharist? Or maybe you were already baptized and now you've received the Eucharist and confirmation and you're going to confession. And so it's been very fruitful. We've really enjoyed it. Joe's just the perfect guy to do it. And if you are in that situation, if you're aspiring to the Catholic Church, approaching the Catholic Church, and you'd like to ask a question, 888-318-7884, you should, I'm going back to the phones, but I want to tell you this, you should check out Joe's podcast, Shameless Popery. You can listen to it, watch it on YouTube. It's also available, it's just available anywhere you get your podcasts. So check it out, Shameless Popery, the podcast. Wherever you get your podcasts. Joe?
Yeah, tomorrow we're dealing with Was Mary Perpetually a Virgin? So if you want to know the answer to that.
Avoiding the controversial ones, huh? Just going.
Yeah, exactly.
888-318-7884, the number. Linda wasn't able to stay on the line, but I want to ask her a question. Listening in Georgia on the Quest there in Atlanta. If we were baptized as babies, would we be able to go through the RCIA program?
And the answer is yes. In fact, oftentimes, it's a great kind of catch-up for the catechesis you maybe didn't get as a kid.
Yeah.
My own parish, we have a rule that if you're a Catholic who's like already a practicing Catholic, you can come if you bring a non-Catholic, just to like kind of control crowd sizes. But it's actually great that there are that many people who want to come. It's beautiful that oftentimes they'll have good questions. Sometimes they'll even have like a good way. You know, maybe I'll answer a question a certain way. And then one of the Catholics in the room will say, oh, by the way, here's how I heard it, or here's, you know, a helpful way of thinking about it. Oh. And so it can be really great. It in terms kind of keeps the conversation going. So I'd really encourage anyone who thinks they'd benefit from it to join. And you don't have to, like, joining does not mean that you are saying, I am definitely at Easter going to come into the church, or I'm going to get confirmed, or I'm going to come back. You know, it is just saying, this is interesting, I'd like to find out more.
Very cool.
That's all.
Now, what about that person who, and I think there are a lot of them, they actually, maybe they went to Catholic school, they got baptized, they received their first communion, but because of the way we do the order of them in the Latin church, they never got their confirmation. So they have actually, they've gone to confession before, they've gone to, they've received the Eucharist, but they've never been confirmed. Would RCIA be for them?
Yeah, I think absolutely. And it can be very helpful. And you know, when you explain kind of your situation, you'll usually find there's a group of people in that exact situation who, you know, they're going to get different sacraments at Easter. They're not going to get baptized, obviously, but they will get confirmed. And so it's a real joy. It's a privilege to get to walk with those people wherever they are. You'll find with most RCIA programs, if they're of any size, you're going to get kind of a range mm-hmm. of kind of how much people already know, what their questions are. And so you should feel free, whether you feel like your questions are so basic you're embarrassed, or whether you feel like they're so complicated that you kind of despair of anyone having an answer, wherever you are, I would say check it out, see what your local parish has to offer, and hopefully it's your speed. If it's not, then maybe you could even ask, say, hey, I need something a little more basic, or I need something a little more advanced. Is there a parish around here that you could recommend? And chances are really good. You can get plugged in with a community of people who are on the same journey, who can kind of support you in the walk, who you can ask questions of and find out answers together. It's a real joy.
Open forum for those preparing to come into the church, 888-318-7884. We go to Florida now. Daniel in Florida, listening to EWTN on Channel 130, Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Daniel, glad you're here. Go ahead with your question for Joe.
Hey, guys. Thank you all for doing this and for taking my call. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
So myself, my wife, and our three daughters are all coming into the church on Easter Vigil. And we're very excited about it, super, super excited about it. We actually, my wife and I just did the rite of election this past Sunday.
Wonderful.
And because of you guys and other resources, mostly on the internet and people I've talked to and the instructors in the class, almost every single one of my objections that I initially had to Catholicism have been answered, and I'm fully on board with it.
What happened?
Oh, no, maybe that was it. He just said he's got no problems.
Daniel, did we? He's still on the line, but we're just not hearing anything. Okay, I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what, Daniel. I don't know. I'm going to ask you the question that I have written in front of me, and we'll get Joe's answer, and then I'll come back and see if we've got you on the line. Because
I like that cliffhanger. I agree with everything the church says.
I know that was very positive. Maybe that was just a super positive call. I agree with
you. Yeah. So, hey guys,
bye.
No problem.
See ya.
Call and say hi.
All right. So this is what he told Edgar that he wanted to ask. If the Pope, he says, I agree with everything the church teaches except for papal authority. If the Pope were to declare something ex cathedra against Scripture, what would happen?
That's a good question. So, Daniel, I think the first thing I'd ask you is, well, how do you think the church got all those other questions right? And so, I guess you're not there to answer. So, Si, you don't want to answer on Daniel's behalf?
No, I don't.
So, I mean, think about it this way. Like, if you say everything other than papal infallibility, the church has gotten right on all these big issues, whether it's the nature of Christ, natures of Christ, whether it's the Trinity, whether it's the sacraments, whether it's the nature of the church, whether it's fill in the blank. And all of these questions, many of which are subtle, many of which are nuanced, many of which had brilliant people arguing the wrong answers throughout history, that the church got all of these right. Well, was that by divine power or by human power? Because if it's by human power, the church is the luckiest organization of all time. And I don't know how much you know about Catholic news, but the church is not the luckiest organization of all time. Instead, I think we'd have to say that it's divine power, that God has led the church divinely in the midst of all the human chaos, in the midst of all the human sin, that he's led the church into all truth as he promised he would at the Last Supper. Jesus promises that he'll send the Spirit of truth to guide the church into all truth. And so if that's true, if we got the Bible right, if we got the Trinity right, if we got Christology right, if we got the church right, if we got the sacraments right, and on down the list, it doesn't make sense to me to think we'd get the papacy wrong, because that's a pretty important one. And if we're dealing with divine power, it's like saying, what if we found out one of the books of the Bible was not inspired? Or, you know, I believe in the inspiration of the Gospel of Matthew, except for Matthew 16. It just feels arbitrary to say that's where I'm going to check my trust, my faith. Either this is the work of God or it's not. If it's not the work of God, we would expect to see a lot more errors than one. If it is the work of God, we don't have to worry about even one error. That'd be the first thing I'd say. The second thing, given that, the hypothetical, what if the Pope were to ex cathedra declare something against Scripture, is like asking, what if Jesus contradicts the Father? Or what if the Bible contradicts Jesus? Like, if you understand the way God is protecting the church, the Bible, the Pope in this particular context, and then you see why the question presupposes the wrong answer. It assumes that it's capable of error and then does err, and the whole point of infallibility is that there is no capacity of error. So what could happen is that the Pope says something infallibly that I disagree with, that my reading of Scripture would have pointed me in the other direction. And that's okay, because I know between the two of us, only one of us is protected by infallibility, and it's not me. So that's the real issue. It's not that the church contradicts the Bible. It's that the church sometimes contradicts Protestant readings of the Bible. But neither Protestants nor Catholics believe Protestants are infallible in their reading of the Bible. And so I think we have a pretty clear answer, you know, when there's a contradiction there, when there's a conflict, who to trust. So I don't know. I hope that helps, Daniel. I hope you're able to kind of tune in for the answer.
And I hope you'll call back, Daniel, because what a great story of your family coming in to the Catholic Church.
I'm actually really excited.
Would have loved to have chatted about it a little more. And if you call back, we will chat about it a bit more because that's just really cool. And we love talking about that stuff. But we lost Daniel, and so maybe we'll get him back. We'll see. The number here is 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884 on YouTube. Now I can't find the name of the person, but somebody was asking, do you have to pay to go through RCIA to come into the Catholic Church?
I jokingly want to say yes, so that people get, but no, you don't. It's totally free. It's you don't have to pay. And as a general rule, you never have to pay for sacraments. People get confused because you do have to pay for like the church for a wedding, but you never have to pay for the sacraments themselves, and you don't have to pay for sacramental prep. You can if you want to do like a free will offering, but I've never received that, and my work in RCIA never expect that. It's a way of giving back to the parish, and so I would just treat it that way. Don't let money be an obstacle at all.
888-318-7884. I do want to let the callers who are on the line know I'm coming right to you when we come back, but there are lines open if you're preparing or thinking about preparing to come into the Catholic Church. Your calls are welcome today. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest. Give us a call, 888-318-7884.
Want to know more about the origins of the Catholic Church? Joe Heschmeyer explores the beginnings of Christianity. In the early church was the Catholic Church. Joe digs deep into the words and actions of those who lived right after the apostles to refute anti-Catholic claims of how the faith was lived back then. Order your copy of The Early Church Was the Catholic Church today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
As Catholic apologetics have gotten stronger, Protestant responses have gotten stronger as well. And now they have their own answers to rebut the standard Catholic proofs. Don't fret, we've got you covered. In his new book, Meeting the Protestant Response, apologist Carlo Broussard gives well-reasoned biblical answers to Protestant comebacks. Order your copy of Meeting the Protestant Response today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
As a child, the great theologian Thomas Aquinas asked, "What is God?" Best-selling author Kevin Vost's new book follows the mature thought of Aquinas in answering that question. In clear and approachable fashion, What is God examines God's attributes and considers questions about him that have vexed mankind for centuries. Order your copy of What is God today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Joe Heschmeyer, our guest this hour. Your calls welcome, 888-318-7884. It's an open forum for anyone approaching the Catholic Church. Many people will receive their sacraments in just weeks and be fully initiated into the Catholic Church, whether they were baptized as babies, maybe they were baptized and received one or two other sacraments, and they're going to be fully initiated, or maybe they have never been initiated as Christians at all, and these will be the first sacraments they receive. That's why it's such a joyful time in the Catholic Church, what we call the Easter Vigil. And if you are in that situation, or you're thinking about being in that situation, this hour is for you. 888-318-7884. Joe Heschmeyer is an apologist here at Catholic Answers, a very, very fine speaker and the proprietor of Shameless Popery, his podcast, Shameless Popery. And this time, Shameless Popery, it drops tomorrow, right? So each time
a new episode
drops on a Thursday. And tomorrow, you said, is about, is Mary really perpetually virgin?
Yep, exactly.
All right.
You know, it's, a lot of Protestants think, how could you possibly think Mary was a virgin? Doesn't Matthew 1 say they didn't have relations until Jesus was born? Doesn't, you know, Mark's gospel mention the brothers of Jesus? And it turns out this is one of those times, like when Jesus says, the Father is greater than I, where the surface level reading is maybe not the right one.
All right. Get that tomorrow at Shameless Popery. You can find it at, can you just go to shamelesspopery.com?
ShamelessJoe.com.
ShamelessJoe.com. I knew that I had that wrong. ShamelessJoe.
But you can also, yeah, you can get it on Spotify, Apple Music. If you want the video version, it's going to be available on YouTube tomorrow as well. So, yeah, wherever you want to watch or listen.
All right, off we go to Nova Scotia, Canada. Rob in Nova Scotia, Canada, listening on the Catholic Answers Live app. Rob, welcome. Go ahead with your question for Joe.
Hi, Joe. Loved your stuff on the early church. My question deals with the readings from last Sunday, and that's Jesus on the Mount of Transfiguration. Catholics tend to say that was Mount Tabor. Protestants tend to say that's Mount Hermon, and they argue, look, there was a Roman fortress on the top of Mount Tabor in the first century. That makes it unlikely. What can you add to that discussion?
Yeah, I think the only thing I would add to that discussion is that Origen, in the second century, maybe the early third century, points to this as the traditional location, that Mount Tabor is where Jesus is said to have been transfigured. And so you have to assume that local knowledge, if anybody, in other words, if we have a way of knowing where the mountain is, our best way to like reconstruct that is, well, what did the locals say 100 years after the fact? Because it seems like the kind of information that might be reliably preserved, you know, in the same way that a famous battle, we usually know where the location of the battle is because that's the kind of thing that's, it's a significant event where geographically it matters where it is. And so something like a mountain is also not like a field where you're likely, you know, like I don't put a lot of stock that we know exactly which spot the shepherds were in when the angel appeared to them because there's a bunch of fields around the area of Bethlehem. It could be anywhere. But Mount Tabor is pretty distinctive. And it has a religious significance for the Jews and the Christians, and it was known, and you've got Origen talking about it, you've got Cyril of Jerusalem, I believe, talking about it. You have a lot of early Christians saying, here's where it was. The Protestant position, Mount Hermon, I don't believe that starts until the 19th century, when you've got academics going back and second-guessing the early Christians about early Christianity. And I'm skeptical of that whole endeavor. You know, if all the early Christians say one thing, in some 19th century Anglican says another thing, I trust the early Christians. They're in a better position to know. They get the important questions right that, you know, the 19th century Anglican doesn't. And so unless we have some really good reason to believe the early Christians got something wrong, I default to them being right, even on those issues where, you know, no one's claiming the early Christians are infallible here, but they're more likely to know the right answer. That's all we're saying.
Okay.
That makes a lot of sense. Just wanted to recommend one book I found helpful going through the RCIA. That is Peter Kreis' book, Catholic Christianity, his commentary on the Catechism. Very good.
Oh, wonderful.
Wonderful. Yeah, Peter Kreis is a rock star. He has a lot of great stuff. He writes books faster than I read books. It's incredible. But yeah. He's very solid, very reliable, so I'd highly recommend. I've not read that book. I've read a number of his books and been very pleased with him. So.
Rob, thanks very, very much. Hey, if you're preparing to come into the Catholic Church and you've got questions that have not been answered yet, maybe you're thinking of entering into the Catholic Church and you've got questions that haven't been answered yet, give us a call, 888-318-7884. It's an open forum. For those in the RCIA or otherwise preparing to come into the church. Before I go back to the phones, however, and please hang on the line because we do want to take your call. I got to go to Thomas the TikTok engine because, there was an RCIA question on TikTok?
There actually was, yeah. Someone did ask us a question generally about his experience with RCIA.
All right. Go ahead. Give it to Joe.
Yeah, Joe, this person says he asked us directly on TikTok. He's a single dad, middle-aged, busy life. He says he started RCIA 3 times in the last 10 years and has yet to finish any of those times. He wants to know your thoughts on doing RCIA online instead.
Yeah, I think, first of all, remember RCIA is made for man. Man is not made for RCIA. You know, to paraphrase Mark 2:27. I would recommend first and foremost going to talk to the pastor of his local church. And because I think there's something really important, actually, about getting plugged in the local community. Like if you have just internet Christianity, internet Catholicism, that's a weak root. And
absolutely
it's
agree.
It's hard to maintain that. Mm-hmm. And so having an actual ability to say, here's a local community I'm linked up with. Maybe I can't make it every week. Maybe, you know, my schedule doesn't permit that. Maybe I meet with the priest one-on-one. But there's some kind of local, we could say, incarnational reality. That you're actually walking with someone. You're actually accountable to someone. You've got someone you can reach out to, and it's not all just behind a screen. I think that's it's life-changing. It makes a major difference. And I think it's more in line with what we understand about the nature of human community in light of the incarnation.
Okay, but as far as like taking the classes, fulfilling his requirements, there's nothing in principle wrong with doing whatever they offer online.
I mean, if he wants to watch stuff online or listen to this show or whatever to help supplement, by all means. But this is something his pastor can also say, I'd like you to listen to this, I'd like you to watch that. Because ultimately, his pastor has to make the judgment that he is ready to move forward and receive the sacraments, or he can say, I don't think you're ready. And so it's important to keep that human connection in person, in addition to whatever else he may do.
Okay, good. That's very, very fair. And as social media manager, I want to underscore that, Internet Catholicism is not the cream of the crop by any means.
Yes.
You know?
Well, look, I mean, I do a lot of stuff online. I do a lot of stuff on the Internet. It's great for what it is, but let's not mistake it for what it isn't meant to be.
Well yeah. said.
And it's funny because we all, it's not just the person coming into the RCIA, Joe, but everything that you said goes for all of us as Catholics. Like yeah. the physical presence is an important thing. And it's kind of lacking in many places and in many of our lives and many of our experiences of the Catholic Church. That's lacking.
Yeah. So both Chris Cech, our boss, and Father Paul Cech, his brother, really loved the word
propinquity.
Yes, physical nearness. And it points to this reality that, you know, I have a different experience of working at Catholic Answers when I'm on site compared to when I'm working remotely. And there is something to that. I think it's great to be able to be near my family here in Kansas City, but I don't want to pretend like there's not a sacrifice in terms of the physical proximity to being with my coworkers. Now, I happen to like my family better than my coworkers. Sheesh. But, you know, you never know less. There's a trade-off made there.
Your coworkers like your family better than you, too. So.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, they make fewer puns.
Universally, my family is just better than me or the people I work with.
It
wasn't the contest there, Si. But, you know, like you can't confess your sins over the phone to the priest.
No.
There has to actually be the physical incarnational presence, because that's the whole idea of the sacraments. God could do everything remotely, at a distance, just with words, but he works in real life in this bodily, physically present kind of way. That's the whole reason behind the incarnation. It's the whole reason behind the sacraments. And we in the modern age, particularly, I would say since COVID, risk losing sight of this human need for human connection and for human divine connection in a physical kind of way.
Thank you, Thomas. Thank you very much. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest. Joe, we're going to take a quick break, but we're going to hang around. We're going to keep taking calls from folks preparing to enter the Catholic Church. If that is you, either thinking about coming into the Catholic Church or you're working your way there for the Easter Vigil, the big night, then give us a call if you've got a question, 888-318-7884. We'd love to hear your experience as well. I mean, we've had calls drop and whatnot this hour, so we haven't gotten to hear as many of the experiences as we usually do, but we'd love to hear what brought you to this moment that you're approaching the Catholic Church, who you're coming in with. Maybe it's just you. Maybe it's, as one caller said today, him and the family. Whatever is the case, if you're getting ready to enter the church, we'd love to talk with you. 888-318-7884.
Hang on, we'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Do you love sharing the gospel and want to learn to be more effective? Join the St. Paul Street Evangelization Online School of Evangelization. You will learn to build bridges of trust and make disciples by befriending strangers, proclaiming the gospel, inviting people to the church, and praying with others. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you are unable to give, we'll give you a membership at no cost. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
He is honored by the church as a saint and theologian with the title of Universal Doctor. Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Albert the Great was a Dominican, theologian, scientist, and teacher, of whom it was said that he knew the sum total of human knowledge in his time. He also helped shape the even more brilliant St. Thomas Aquinas, the angelic doctor. Albert died in 1280 and was named a Doctor of the Church in 1931.
To find out more, visit EWTN.com and click on Catholicism.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. And someone mentioned a little while ago, a caller mentioned a little while ago, the right of election. You might be thinking, what is that? It's funny that there are many Catholics who have lived their entire life as Catholics. They don't know what the right of election is because it's not a right that they've ever participated in. But for those coming into the church, it's a big day to meet with the bishop, to meet with all those others, to pray with all those others who are coming into the church. Do you have a right of election there in Kansas?
Yeah, where you are? We do. And so it's you know, for people who've already been baptized but weren't catechized and they want to move to RCIA, you know, for confirmation. So yeah, we actually have a process for that.
Yeah.
It's something the church recognizes that. Even if you were sacramentalized, if you weren't catechized, it's hard to live the faith well. I'll tell you, you know, yesterday I was teaching on the Eucharist. I was, you know, giving a talk on the Eucharist. And afterwards, a woman came up and was confused. And she said, "You said something about drinking the blood of Christ and at the Last Supper. And I thought it was just wine that symbolized the blood of Christ." And it was, you know, God bless her. She wasn't making a big argument, but she had managed, I think, to go to Catholic Mass for a while and not pick up that even when the priest would use language about the body and blood of Christ, I think she just thought he was always meaning it metaphorically. And she just happened to have that kind of light bulb moment. And so wherever you are in the process, that can be a really important thing to just have someone where you can go and ask those questions too, where you don't feel silly about it.
Again, if you are in that process, you're welcome here, 888-318-7884. The process is different parish to parish, diocese to diocese, but generally at the very, maybe the most common thing is sometime in August or September, then a new RCIA class, so to speak, will begin. People will enter in. As Joe has said repeatedly, and people really should be aware of this, there's no obligation. You can come once. You can come twice. You just have questions. You think some part of me is attracted to the Catholic Church. Let me see what these people are about. And you come and see. It's a kind of a come and see opportunity. But those who have decided that they would like to be in full communion with the Catholic Church, go on and sometime in the spring, when Easter comes around, they are welcomed into the Catholic Church, receiving what we call the sacraments of initiation. If they've been baptized, then they receive the other sacraments of initiation that they have not yet received. If they have not yet been baptized, they are what's called fully initiated. That is baptism, confirmation, and the reception of the Eucharist, all in that one Mass. That's the way my wife did it. I missed most of that Mass because of a crying baby. So I'm fairly certain that my wife did it, received all the sacraments, but every time it was one of those things, Joe, when my wife came into the church, how old was she? She must have been about 6 months old at that time, maybe 8 months old. And every time they would clap, and they clap a lot in that Mass, my middle daughter, she'd just freak out and start not just crying, screaming, crying. So out I would go, and then I'd come back in, and my wife had received another sacrament. So I missed pretty much all of it. But nonetheless, it does seem to have taken. It all worked out.
She seems like a very good Catholic woman now.
She is. Yeah, she is.
Working off her purgatory, but I won't say how.
No, you know exactly how.
I think everyone listening knows how, but I'm going to let them fill in those blanks.
I'm going to go to Doug in Pensacola, Florida, listening on 103.3 FM in Pensacola. Doug, we're glad you're here. Go ahead with your question for Joe.
Hi. Just wondering, if a couple gets married outside of the church and then they come in through the RCIA process, is their marriage valid?
So, to be clear, were either of you baptized Catholic?
Yes, I actually was married in the church, but my brother is getting married outside the church. Well, in the church, but his wife is not Catholic. So if they don't get married in the church and then they come into the church, would that be valid?
Oh, I see. I see. So, yeah, in a case... Okay, so let me give a full answer to this. We recognize natural marriage, you know, two pagans getting married, for instance. Not as a sacrament, but as a real reality. The two become one flesh. You know, Genesis speaks of this. This isn't just true of Jews and Christians. This is true of human beings. We also recognize that there can be a sacramental quality to marriage, even among baptized Christians who don't recognize it as a sacrament. So two baptized Christians who marry one another are engaged in a sacrament, even if they're having a valid marriage in a Protestant ceremony. So, for instance, two baptized Protestants who've only ever been Protestant to get married in a Protestant marriage, we would say that is a valid marriage and even a sacramental one. The tricky part is the situation you described. Someone who is baptized Catholic, who is thus canonically bound to get married in the Catholic Church, who ignores those rules and illicitly tries to get baptized, or excuse me, illicitly tries to get married outside of the church. In those cases, we don't recognize the marriage as valid, not because of anything inherent, but because they are bound by law to do the marriage in a certain way and they haven't done that. So in those cases, we would say that is not of itself a valid marriage. What happens there, you know, like you said, if they convert, if they come back to the church, or if they start to take this maybe more seriously, is what's called the convalidation. And so you can see this laid out in canon law, in canon 1156, where you can have the marriage blessed. And in fact, you can get what's called a radical signation. Now, that sounds, I don't know,
painful.
Confusing. Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, I got to get this ulcer radically signed. No, so a radical signation is a healing of the roots, radici, roots. And so that is retroactively convalidating the marriage to say, you know, so in the case of like a simple convalidation, you would say we didn't consent properly at the time, but now we do consent. So now there's a sacramental marriage. A radical signation, you say, yeah, we think God will retroactively bless this marriage because we actually did have the consent. We just didn't have the right form. We didn't get married in the right place or whatever that looks like. So I would say all of that is possible. Having said that, don't purposely get married outside of the church and then count on a convalidation or a radical signation. Get married in the church according to the law of the church. Now, that's advice for your brother and not you, but hopefully that's clear enough, right?
Okay, Doug?
Yeah, that's great. Thanks.
Wonderful. Great. Thanks, Doug. Thanks very much. Open forum for those preparing to come into the church or thinking about preparing to come into the church. Next, we go to Nikki in Portland, Oregon, watching on YouTube. Nikki, thank you for your call. Go ahead with your question for Joe Heschmeyer.
Thank you for taking my call. Actually, I have two, so I am preparing to come in at Easter Vigil. The first question I have is about the Eucharist. So I feel like I'm in this Lenten desert, working my way towards the Eucharist, that's like my food and my drink at the end of this Lenten desert, and that it's really hard to do this without being fed by the blood and body and soul and divinity of Jesus. Although I'm told because I've been baptized, I'm in the body of Christ, and yet it's still a struggle. So that's number one. Number two is, you know, every time I say the Apostles' Creed, and I've been a Christian, I mean, I've known Christ, at least I met him like 5.5 years ago, and I know that he died for my sins. I know that. But in my soul, there's still a level where it's like, what? I always forget to say, I believe in the forgiveness of sins. So there's something that I'm not getting. Like, I don't understand it on a theological, intellectual level, but not in an emotional or spiritual level.
Yes, so those are that's a good distinction. Questions. Those are good questions. Okay. Those are really good questions. Are you familiar with what's called a spiritual communion?
Who is what?
A spiritual communion.
Great. So, a spiritual communion. There are certain prayers you can pray So if you go to Mass and you're not able to receive the Eucharist, you know, either because you're not fully in the church yet, or maybe you're conscious of some sin that holds you back, there are prayers called spiritual communion prayers, where you just say, Jesus, I know this is you, and I invite you into my heart. And so you don't get to receive the Eucharist, but you can ask for all of those graces. You can ask for all of that unity with Jesus. And it's still, you know, obviously it's second place to receiving the Eucharist. It's good. You want that. You're hungry for the Eucharist. That's great. But you don't have to settle for nothing. You see what I mean? That you can get this as you journey towards Jesus. You can be comforted in knowing that Christ is present to us in a wide variety of ways, and that he makes himself present in all manner of ways. And this is one of the ways in which he makes himself present to us. So that's on the Eucharist. On the other question, on the forgiveness of sins, is your question specifically about the idea of baptism for the forgiveness of sins? Or is your question about Jesus coming to forgive our sins? Or just about sins being forgiven? What do you think of? Like, where is the emotional difficulty?
I was baptized in a non-Catholic church, according to the correct formula. Mm-hmm. But I just I just don't get it emotionally. Like, I know he died for our sins. I understand that theologically. I understand it, but I just, when I go to confession and I do confess and I'm so sorry, you know, just like I cry during the act of contrition. I mean, I do, but I don't feel that, like, I feel like I'm not forgiven.
Ah,
yeah, I understand what you mean there. I would say what you've already established is really good. You don't always have the feeling of being forgiven. Because, look, there are sins that we've committed that we feel bad about and that we're kind of horrified that we've done. And that's okay, and that's good, in a way. Like, we should have a revulsion of sin. It makes us less likely to fall into it again. But the danger is that we allow our revulsion of sin to creep into our self-image. And that is a trick of the devil, because that's what he wants to do. Like, the devil only has really two tricks. One, he wants to convince you that sin is smaller than it really is. And two, he wants to convince you that sin is bigger than it really is. That's it. So first he'll say, oh, come on, is this sin really that bad? And then once you do it, he'll say, oh, look at this, you've done this, you're so horrible, you can never be forgiven. And it's worth, I think, reading on and praying on the example of Judas and the example of Peter. Both of them betrayed Jesus, right? Like, on the same night, Judas sells Jesus out. Peter denies him three times. There's both this radical betrayal from two of the people closest to him. And the difference isn't in what they've done wrong, it's what they do next. So Judas feels bad about it. He even gives the money back. But then he comes away with this idea that he can't be forgiven, and so he kills himself. And Peter, he weeps for his sins. And then he's received back in. Like, he allows himself to be forgiven. He allows himself to experience the mercy of God. And he's able to be a great apostle. And so, look, what you've done in the past, maybe what you struggle with right now, that is not what defines you, right? Like, that's what makes all of us sinners. And Christ says that he comes not for the well, but for the sick. And so the question is, do we really believe the mercy of God is bigger than our sins? And that's not about, am I taking my sin seriously enough? That's about, am I taking God's mercy seriously enough? And it's okay if the emotions aren't always there. It's okay if I still feel a little disgusted by what I've done. But I can meditate on, God forgives even me. You know, St. Paul says, while we were enemies of God, he died for us. Right? Like, while we had put ourselves at odds with God, he had mercy on us. He loved us and he died for us. And so just continue to meditate on that. And it's okay if it takes a while, right? Like, in the same way, if you know, if a person has been in a lot of unhealthy relationships, finds themselves in a healthy one, it can take a while for them to really trust it because they're so used to the bad thing. And so I would just say, trust it, give it time, and over time you'll start to believe it a little more.
Nikki, thank you so much for the call. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest, and we're going to continue. So if you are on your way to full communion with the Catholic Church, whether it'll be this year, next year, or sometime in the future, and you have questions about the Catholic faith, things unresolved, things unanswered, this is your opportunity. 888-318-7884 is the number. We will take a very quick break, and we'll come right back and do more of it. We'd love to take that call. 888-318-7884.